And we're holding on page Samach Gimel in Shabbos, about the middle of the page, turning up on a Maisa B'chosid Echad. Middle of page Samach Gimel in Shabbos. So middle, for those who are using other editions, it would be the middle of Oist Tzadik Gimel. We talked yesterday about the concept, how important it is to be done with Kaf's Chos. To judge another yid favorably. And by the way, there are dinim in that. I mean, the case we had yesterday involving the poil and the balabas and a couple of cases that we're going to have today are all that takes a little bit of a far-fetched explanation to say that the person is doing something right. So there are, in fact, the various Rishonim and Achronim talk about dinim in that. When you have somebody who's known to be an Odom Kosher, then yes, you have to bend over backwards to be Danim the Kav Schus, even if you see him doing something which seems on the face of it to be a blatant Aveda. With a regular, with the average person, you don't necessarily have to go that far, but and then you have somebody who's Muchzik as a Rosha, then you don't need to, but whatever, there are dinim in it. So in these cases over here, we're talking about people who were known to be Ksherim and Tzadikim. And therefore, even though what they're doing, it seems you need a very unusual explanation to account for what they're doing without it being an Aveda, nevertheless, you're obligated to do that. Ben Yoyoda, by the way, points out an interesting thing. He says, we had yesterday at the end of the story, and we're going to have in each of these two stories, where they say that to the same way as you judge me l'kafs chus, Hashem should judge you l'kafs chus. Ben Yoyoda asks, what do you need that for? A person needs to judge l'kafs chus because you can never know another person's motivations. Hashem knows everybody's motivations anyway. Where's their room for being done l'kafs chus? So he says, because the vort is, sometimes you can have, let's say, a person didn't do a mitzvah, but they would have done, they take the view, they would have done it if they would have done the opportunity, if they would have had the opportunity. So that's an example where Hashem can judge the Makafs Chos and judge that they taka would have done it if they had the opportunity and they just didn't because they didn't have that. Okay, so the Gemara says, turn it up on them. Maisa b'chosid echon. About the middle of the page. Turn it up on them, maisa b'chosid echon. It happened once with a particular chosid, and Rashi points out, based on another Gemara, that whenever it says Maisa b'chosid echad, it means either Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava or Rabbi Yehuda ben Rabbi Loi. So this chassid was either Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava or Rabbi Yehuda ben Rabbi Loi. Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava was one of the chaverim of Rabbi Akiva. He's one of the Asara Arugim Malchus. Rabbi Yehuda ben Rabbi Loi is the regular Rabbi Yehuda, the Tana in Shas, one of the Talmidim of Rabbi Eliezer and later on of Rabbi Akiva. Anyway, so it happened with him. Shepoder Riva Achas Bas Yisrael. He one time redeemed a Jewish girl from captivity. She had been captured or arrested or whatever by Goyim, and he arranged pidyon shvuim for her. V'lamolein. Then when it came, they're staying overnight in an inn on the way back to wherever he's going to take her. He shkiva tachas magaloisav. He had her sleep under the legs of his bed, so like fairly close to him, like in his room. Lamacha yarad v'tovol v'shana l'tamidim. The next day, the chosid echad, whichever Rabbi Yehuda it was, went and toibled, and only then he started teaching his tamidim. Now, on the surface of it, it could seem like he had relations with that girl, and therefore now he's tamei tumaskeri, and therefore now he needs to toibol before he can teach Torah. Technically, we learned in brachas, there is takonas Ezra. At one point, the chachamim made a takona that you can't daven or learn Torah without toibling. Later on, they were mevatel it because most people weren't able to be nizer in it. Nevertheless, chassidim v'anshei ma'isa still would. But on the face of it, that's what it looked like. Primarily, it means Shmona Esrei, right? But here we're talking about teaching, anyway. Omalahem. So now the chassid echad says to his tamidim, "B'shar she'shkaptia tachas magaloisai. When I had her sleep under by the foot of my bed, b'mecha shantuni, what did you suspect me of?" Now, on one level, of course, Ben Yoyada points out, it's not like he thought they would suspect him, but he wanted to teach a lesson that other people who might be hearing what's going on, they could take a lesson from this, how to be done the kafskos. Also, of course, he has the opportunity, therefore, when they are done in the kafskos and they say how they were, he has the opportunity to give them the bracha that Hashem should also do the same for them. On another level, though, he explains with a number of these stories, when we say over here, b'mecha shadtuni, a lot of the details over here, b'mecha shadtuni, it also amounts to him saying, not just is there anything that you suspected me of, but the other way around. Do you think that I was choshed in you, that I was choshed b'kshedim, and therefore, like, do you think, for example, I had to keep her in my private room because I'm afraid that one of you might be mezana with her? So Amarnu. So they answered. We said Shema Yeshbon a Talmud Sheinib Boduk LeRebbe. There might be among us one particular Talmud whom Rebbe hasn't thoroughly checked out. He doesn't know all his midas to be able to rely on to leave her with us, and that there wouldn't be any problem. So in other words, they could say, for example, most of us, yes, we've been your Talmidim a long time. You know us, and of course you would never be choshed in us. But there's always newcomers among the Talmidim, and we thought it might have been like that. Next, he says, "B'shar shi'aradti b'tavalti." When I went down and tovold, "B'mech hashadtuni." What do you suspect me of? Amarnu. So they answered. We said, "Shem b'nei torah haderech ira keri l'reb." Maybe because of the hardships of the road, it happened that you became a baal keri. Sometimes it happens. The Gemara mentions, the Mishnah rather mentions in Zovim that the same thing can happen with a zov. So the same thing can happen with keri. That it can happen because of physical exertion. That it can cause that to happen. So therefore, so not because there was any znus, but just not because there was even hiror on her, but just because of the trouble of the journey. Omer lahem. So he says, "Ha'avoda, I swear by the avoda kachoya." That's exactly what happened. Ba'atim k'shem shedantuni l'kaf schus. So just as you judge me favorably, I'm mokem yodin eschem l'kaf schus. So Hashem should judge you favorably from in the future. Here's where Marsha points out, which I'd said this yesterday, but it actually belongs really over here, that this apparently was after the Churban. Whether the Chosid Echad is Rabbi Huda ben Bava, or whether it's Rabbi Huda ben Rabbi Loi, their careers took place after the Churban. So therefore, especially when they were old enough to have Talmidim of their own. So why is he swearing by the Avodah? So first of all, that may have been the normal way where they swore, even after the Beis Hamikdash was destroyed. Or he says also that the word Avodah has the same nekudas as the name Yudke Vodke, as it's usually printed. And therefore, swearing Ha-Avodah is tantamount to swearing in Hashem's name. The Gemara continues. Tonon Abbonon. One time, the Talmud Chachamim needed a certain thing by a certain Roman noblewoman. All of the noblemen of Rome used to regularly visit her, and you can imagine they're not just visiting her for her good advice. Anyway, so now one time the Chachamim needed something from her. So they're asking among themselves who's going to go, who's going to take the chance of themselves of going into such a place of Toma. So Rabbi Yeshua says, "I'll go." So Rabbi Yeshua goes along accompanied by his Talmidim. When he came to the entrance of her house, he took off his tefillin 4 amas away from the door, the nichnas, and he went in, the nala delas bifneim, and he locked the door behind them. And after he went out, yodad v'tovol v'shona, the Talmudiv, he went and tovled, and only then taught Torah to his students. But Amalem, so he asked them, "Bishor shechalatzit." Now, on the face of it, again, if it wasn't Rabbi Yeshua, if it was a regular person, we might suspect that what happened was he took off his tefillin, because you're not allowed to have tefillin on when you have relations. In those days, remember, they wore tefillin all day, but you're not allowed to have them on, and you're not even allowed to have them in the same room unless they're covered when you're having relations. And therefore, on the face of it, you might think if it wasn't Rabbi Yeshua that that's what he did, and therefore afterwards he's tovled. So he asked them, "When I took off the tefillin, b'mechashatuni, what did you suspect me of?" So they answered, "Amarnu kisover Rebbe, al yukonsa divrek dusha b'makam tuma." Rebbe, you must have figured it's not appropriate that the kedusha of tefillin should go into a place of tuma like this Roman lady's house. Isn't that a problem of yichud? So actually, so the Gemara doesn't deal with that. Well, the Gemara deals 1 second. So b'shashana alti b'mechashatuni. He asked, "When I locked the door, what did you suspect me of?" So they answered, "Amarnu shemet v'malchus yesh bein levena." There may be a kingly matter, a royal matter, or something that has to be kept in utmost secrecy that you have to talk with her, and therefore you couldn't leave the door unlocked because somebody might walk in. Now, you're asking, though, isn't there the problem of Yichud? So first of all, one thing, the Yichud with a goite is also only Medrabbanan. So one of the Mefroshim in the back of the Gemara, I think Rabbi Elazar Meir Horowitz, says it's possible that maybe that Zera wasn't made yet at the time, and therefore there's no Issur in it. But another possibility is that maybe Rabbi Yeshua judged that in this case it doesn't apply, for example, because it may have been a matter of almost Pikuach Nefesh. If they have to deal with this Roman lady, it wasn't Stam something. It must have been something very serious to require Rabbi Yeshua himself to go deal with her. So therefore, under the circumstances, he may have figured there's really no choice. Anyway, What about when I went and toivled, which on the face of it would take place only after a person became tomei with tumas keri, and now you couldn't use the answer as before with the chosid echa that it was mepnei torah chaderech because it wasn't that far a journey. So they answered, "Amarnu shemen nitzat sinoda mipiha al god of shorebi." Maybe a drop of saliva flew out of her mouth and landed on Rebbe's clothing. The Chachamim made a gzera that all goyim are considered like zovim. Midaraisa goy is not matame at all, but midrabanan, the Chacham made a takana that all male goyim are matame as zovim, and all female and all goytis are matame as zovos. Now an actual zov or zova, midaraisa, their saliva is tame. It's an avatuma, and if a person touches it or carries it on their clothing, then they and their clothing become tame. So here, when they're considered a zava, when she's considered a zava, then you'd have the same din. So they said, maybe what happened was, as she was talking with you, a drop of saliva from her landed on your clothing and therefore was matama you, and therefore you had the total. You have similar things in a Rabbi Nissen Gaon. I mean, Gemara points out over here that you have other examples of that kind of thing in other places in Chas. You shouldn't think it's such a far-fetched possibility. You have several other examples, for example, Gemara in Yuma, where it tells about a couple of brothers who one after another were koinim dolim, and each time where they ended up, they had to speak with a goyish king on or right before Yom Kippur, and again, a drop of saliva landed from the guy on their clothing, and they became tomei, and they couldn't do the avoda on Yom Kippur, and another brother had to sub for them. So it's a real possibility. Omalahem, he says, Avoida, I swear by the Avoida, Kacholya, that's exactly what happened. And again, Ba'atim Kashem should Antoni Leschus, just as you judge me favorably, Hamokim Yodin Eschem Leschus, Hashem should judge you favorably. So in all these examples, you see the importance of being Don Makaf Schus and how Hashem pays a person back for that. The Rif, by the way, discusses over here, the Rif at the bottom of the page over here discusses, I mean, so at the beginning we said, Hadonis chaver l'kaf schus, donin oise l'schus. It's a definite thing that Hashem will judge him favorably. In all these three stories, we see that the person is saying, just as you judge me favorably, Hashem should judge you favorably. That amounts to a tefillah that Hashem should do it. Where do we see from that that in fact that's the way it happens? And he answers that it may not be in each of these cases a tefillah, it may be a havtocha, it may be a promise. Not Hashem should judge you, l'kafskos, but Hashem will judge you, l'kafskos. And how could these tzaddikim say that? They would have to be that they knew for a fact that that's how it is.
If someone does not down the kafskos on somebody else, does Hashem punish that person?
So not specifically punish, but we're saying Hashem won't necessarily judge that person, l'kafskos. When you have something that, for example, to take the Ben Yehoyada's example, where you didn't do a mitzvah, and you might say l'kafskos on him that he would have done it if he had the opportunity, then not judging him, l'kafskos, would mean that Hashem might say, well, you know what, he didn't do it, so therefore he doesn't get the schar for it. But yeah, then the flip side, if he is down l'kafskos, then Hashem will treat him accordingly. Further on, the Perek goes on to discuss. Now, since at the beginning of the Perek, I talked about again where you have dinim, where you're allowed to move boxes of straw, grain, or whatever to make room for Orchim or for a base of Medrash. So then the Mishnah goes on to discuss what kinds of things are and aren't you allowed to move on Shabbos. It has to be something that has a use on Shabbos. So even though boxes of straw or grain, you're not normally going to use the grain or the straw, but you could conceivably use it on Shabbos. You could feed it to an animal or you could whatever. As opposed to, for example, the Mishnah describes, you have certain kinds of vegetables or beans or whatever, which are not normally animal food, and therefore those would be muktzah on Shabbos and you can't move them. So then it goes on to discuss that you have different opinions of Tanoim that mention certain kinds of things that you can, because some of them can be eaten by exotic animals. A person might have a certain kind of exotic animal as a pet, and therefore they'd need this kind of thing to feed them. One of them it mentions, for example, is that the Tanakama of a Braisa says you wouldn't be allowed to move broken glass on Shabbos, because what can you do with it? On the other hand, Reb Shimon Gamliel says that you could use it to feed to ostriches. Ostriches, like most birds, don't have teeth, but they have to digest their food. They have to break up and digest their food somehow. So what they commonly do is they'll eat hard things like little pebbles or things like that. Or here we're saying like not sharp shards of glass, obviously it would rip up their throats, but the pastor said, I guess we're talking about pieces of glass that are not quite so sharp, where then it'll help grind up, it'll mix with the food in their gizzard and in their pupik and help digest it and help break it down, digest it. So Rav Shimon Gamliel says, as long as a person has pet ostrich, so first the Gemara says maybe only if he has a pet ostrich, then the Gemara says not necessarily. Even if he doesn't have a pet ostrich, the fact that it is usable for that, says Rav Shimon Gamliel, therefore that would be enough. So now the Gemara says, Amar Abaye, Rav Shimon Gamliel, Virab Shimon, Virab Yishmal, Virab Akiva, Kulu Sviralahu, Kol Yisrael B'nei Malachim Haim. They all hold that as a matter of halacha, the Jewish people are considered princes, and therefore, now everybody, now Maharsha points out, fine, you know, where the Torah says, Bonim Atim LaHashem Alekechem, there's no question, we are children of Hashem. But the point is, these four Tanoim are all saying that that actually has practical implications as far as halacha. So Rav Shimon Gamliel Hodam, and by the way, there is the usual rule that the Gaonim say that when the Gemara does that, when the Gemara lists a whole bunch of Tanoim that all hold the same thing, that is as much as to say that Halacha is not like them after all. Because we're saying, first of all, it means those Tanoim hold that, but implicitly all the other Tanoim disagree. And second of all, it means each of them said his particular din that derives from this point, but they wouldn't necessarily agree with each other's dinning. Rav Shimon Gamliel, for example, saying that you can move broken glass on Shabbos because you can use it to feed to ostriches, because Kol Yisrael B'nei Malachim Haim, the other Tanoim that we're mentioning over here would agree, Kol Yisrael B'nei Malachim Haim, but they wouldn't necessarily agree with this particular application of that halacha. Anyway, so Rav Shimon Gamliel Hodam Moron. So we said the fact that he allows you to move broken glass on Shabbos, even if you're not rich enough to have pet ostriches, but you could be conceivably a yid, ought to be rich enough and ought to be princely enough to have pet ostriches, and therefore Rav Shimon Gamliel allows him to move broken glass on Shabbos. Rav Shimon, the Tanan, where do we see Rav Shimon holds of such a concept? We learn earlier in the Masechta, you have a Mishnah that says, B'nei. Now, earlier we talked about the point that you're not allowed to do various kinds of medicinal things on Shabbos. You're allowed to, for example, eat and drink foods that are food and drinks for healthy people, which also have medicinal uses, like chicken soup or tea or something like that, but not things that are specifically for medicinal use. So the Mishnah mentions over there, So the Mishnah says most people are, so you have a type of oil called rose oil, which most people, the Tanakhama says in the Mishnah, are not allowed to smear that on their skin on Shabbos. But the Mishnah says, Bnei Malachim Sochan Agali Makasein Shemen Vered, princes are allowed to, if they have a wound, they're allowed to smear rose oil on it on Shabbos. Shekein Daukan Shabbnei Malachim Losuk B'chol, because princes do that kind of thing regularly, even on weekdays, in other words, it's not something specifically medicinal for them. For them, it's a normal treatment. And Rav Shimon, I'm a Kol Yisrael B'nei Malachim. And Rav Shimon says, again, that all Jews are B'nei Malachim, and therefore, if it's allowed for B'nei Malachim, then it has to be allowed for all Jews. Next, Rabbi Shmuel v'Rav Akiva, the Tanya, and we learn in a Braisa, Harisha ho yinoshin by elef money. Suppose a person owes 1,000 money, which is an enormous amount of money. A money is 100 zuz. A minimum wage laborer might get 4 zuz a day, the Gemara mentions in some other places. So you're talking, so one money alone would be around a month's pay for a worker. And here you're talking 100 times that. Anyway, the lavush itzdalabas kuf money. Now he's wearing a garment, and itzdala is a type of cloak or something that's worth 100 money. Mafshitin oisoi, we make him take it off and sell it, or mabishin oisoi itzalaharuiloi, and instead Basin will arrange for him to go buy out of the proceeds an appropriate cloak for him. In other words, there's a concept in halacha, it's discussed in Bava Metzia in particular, it's discussed here and there and a few other places. There's a concept called misadrin labal choyim. When a person is in debt and he has to pay it off, Basin will make arrangements for him to have a certain minimum amount of food and clothing and tools for his panosa and things like that. And those are safe from being taken by the creditors, and then everything else is taken and sold under Basin's supervision to pay off his debts. So here we're saying he does need an itzel after all, but he doesn't need one that's worth 100 money. So we'll sell it, and then we'll take a small amount of that money and buy him an itzel that's appropriate to his station. But tana b'shuma b'shmal, but tana b'shuma Rabbi Akiva. But then we learn in a braisa in the name of Rabbi Shmal and in the name of Rabbi Akiva. Kol Yisrael ru'in ma'ose itzela. All Jews deserve to wear such a garment. So therefore, they would say that even though the garment is worth 100 and you could use it to help pay off the debts, you can't take that away from him the same way as you wouldn't take if he had a lesser itzela that's appropriate to his station. Because no matter how expensive the itzela is, no matter what, he's always b'nei malachim, and you can't touch it. At the end of the perek, the Mishnah talks about that dinim about assisting in childbirth on Shabbos, childbirth being a matter of pikuach nefesh. So in general, you're allowed to do whatever it takes to whatever it takes on Shabbos. So in the Gemara goes into various details about that. And one of the things it says, which begins over here in Ein Yaakov, Omer of Yehuda Mishmul, Oisin Medura Lachaya B'Shabbos, B'Moisag Shamin. You're allowed to make a bonfire to warm up a woman who's just given birth. You're allowed to do that on Shabbos during the cold season. So, first of all, when the Chachamim heard that din that Rabbi Yehuda said, they thought it meant only for a woman who just gave birth, but not necessarily for a person who's sick. You wouldn't have that heter to do that on Shabbos. And only in the winter, not in the summer, because in the summer you shouldn't need that. But the Gemara says that's not so. That assumption was incorrect. Doesn't matter a woman who just gave birth or any other kind of sick person. We're talking about a chola sheyesh b'sakana. Doesn't matter whether in the winter or in the summer. Either way, if that's what it takes to that they don't get sicker, then you're allowed to build them a bonfire on Shabbos for them to warm up. And we know this mid itmar. We know this because there was said omer b'chiba oven omer Shmuel. And this is in the name of the same Shmuel as Rabbi Yehuda said in the name of. So we see that when Shmuel said to Rabbi Yehuda that you can make it l'choya b'Shabbos b'moseg shaman, he didn't only mean that. In fact, he meant other similar cases as well, because Rabbi Chiya Ba'ovin says in the name of Shmuel, hikizdam, if a person had blood let, and Rashi says that's even less than a choyla, so how much more so a choyla than this din would apply to. So if a person let blood, when it's standing, and now he's cold, because you lost the blood, then you can make a bonfire to warm them up, even in Tkufas Tammuz, even at the height of the summer. And obviously we're talking on Shabbos, because on weekdays there'd be no need for a heter for that. So therefore we see that Shmuel is talking about not just a woman who gave birth, but also a chola, because if he allows it even for somebody who let blood, how much more so for a chola, whose condition is more serious. And if he only allows it in Tkufas Tammuz, so not even only in the winter season. So so now the Gemara is going to talk further about this whole matter of letting blood and various things about it. So the Gemara says, Shmuel socholei tachtika deshoga. One time, Shmuel, after we had blood let, they couldn't find firewood available to make a bonfire for him, and they needed to, so they broke up for him. Socholei means they broke up, they chopped up, tachtika, a chair, deshoga, made out of shoga wood, which is, Rashi translates it over here as tidhar. There's a Gemara in Rosh Hashanah that mentions a bunch of different kinds of trees. Rashi defines it over there, Rashi translates it into French over there as a fruit tree. So it's a very expensive kind of wood, but nevertheless, they did that because it was more important to be able to make a fire to warm them up. Similarly, Rav Yehuda tzokhalei psoda deyon. Rabbi Yehuda was once in the same situation as well, and for him they broke up for the firewood a table made of yoin. So it's some kind of cedar, some kind of thing in the cedar family. Rashi brings from his Rebbe, Rabbeinu Halevi, that translates it as boxwood. Again, it's not the kind of wood that you would use that you would normally use for a fire for firewood, and certainly not if it was an expensive table, but that was what they had to do. Similarly for Rabba, one time in such a situation, they broke up for him a bench. So, by the way, the Gemara mentions in other places that Rabba was quite poor. So you can imagine there probably wasn't a lot of furniture around his house. So if they had to even break up a bench, Mela with Shmuel and Rav Yehuda, we don't know particularly how they were financially. So they may have been able to afford the loss. Rabbi Pashtus couldn't. So it's Abaya asks him, so aren't we being over on Bal Tashkis over here by breaking up a good piece of furniture? So he answers, Bal Tashkas Degufoi Odifli. The Bal Tashkas of my body is more important to me. It's more important. If he lets blood and doesn't have a fire made, then the cold could cause him to become sick. So therefore that outweighs any concerns about Tashkas about the bench. And that is the din. When you have your Bal Tashkas is important, but other considerations can override. The Gemara continues, Amar of Yehuda Amar Rav, La'olam yimkar adam kores beisai, a person should always sell, even if necessary, the beams of his house, v'yikach min olam l'raglov, and buy shoes for himself. And hikis dam ve'em le mayoichal. Now, on the other hand, if he lets blood and he doesn't have what to eat afterwards, because not only do you need to be warm, you also need to have food afterwards. Just like nowadays, when you give blood, they always have mezonos and orange juice over there. So if you don't have yunkum and olam shabernaglav, the yaspman sochei soda. Then he should even sell the shoes, as important as shoes are. But having a meal after bloodletting is even more important. So he should sell his shoes if necessary and use them to buy the basics for his meal. So Rashi explains the first part, that he should sell even the beams of his house to get shoes. Rashi explains has nothing directly to do with the health matters we're talking about over here. It's just because there's a tremendous bizoyan, a person who walks barefoot in the street, and therefore it's important for him to have shoes. We're actually going to have something towards the end of the Masechta along those lines, where one of the Chachamim, Rabbi Yehoshua ben Percha, is walking around barefoot because he couldn't afford shoes, and a goy or a min over there or whatever makes fun of him. So we see you shouldn't do that. On the other hand, as important as it is to avoid that bizoyan, it's more important for a person's health to eat something after blood. Mausha learns differently. Mausha says that no, both of them have to do with being cold. A person doesn't have shoes, then he's going to get cold if he's walking on the bare ground. Thus, we find, for example, in connection with the halachas of Yom Kippur, that even though you're not allowed to wear leather shoes on Yom Kippur, but a woman during the 30 days after she gave birth is allowed to. So by the same token, we're saying over here, as much as a person needs a roof over his head, it's more important to have shoes on his feet because, like this, the cold that he'd get, the chill he'd get in his body from not wearing shoes outweighs the fact that he's going to get overheated by not having a roof to protect him from the sun. But then, on the other hand, the chill that he could get from bloodletting and then not eating afterwards is even worse, and therefore, for that, it's worth selling his shoes. So, my tzorchei soda, what do we mean by the needs for the meal? What should he be eating after bloodletting? Rav ama basar, Shmuel ama yayin. So Rav says you should be eating meat, Shmuel says wine. Rav ama basar, because it's a nafsha chalaf nafsha. You want to have a soul to replace the soul. Ti hadam hu anefesh, like the pasuk says, the blood is the soul, is the life force of an animal or a person. So now that he had blood removed from his body, which is chayus from his body, so he needs to make up for it with the life of an animal, with meat from an animal. Shmuel says he should drink wine because the red of the wine will make up for the red blood that was removed from him. So the Gemara continues, Simen Shenimsar. This is a simen for the initials or sort of initials, whatever, the key letters of the names of five Amiroyim, where the Gemara is going to describe now what they would do after they did bloodletting. You have to realize, by the way, bloodletting then was a fairly common procedure. It was accepted medical knowledge in those times that you need to let blood every so often, and that way you'll stay healthy. The Gemara, in fact, as you mentioned further on, that until a person reaches 40 years old, he should be doing bloodletting every month, Shmuel's going to say at the bottom of the Amud. Leeches and cupping was more if a person was sick, I guess. Here it would be, I mean, I suppose they could use that method, but whatever, it involves making an incision in the skin and drawing blood out using a tube. Nowadays there are certain rare medical conditions that require it, and in those times it was considered to be a cure-all for a lot of different diseases. I suppose it could have been, maybe had a lot of people, for example, a person has high blood pressure, I suppose it could help to some extent with that, whatever. Anyway, so therefore, the body eventually makes new blood, yeah, but that's why Shmuel says further on that you'd have to do it during the early part of your life, you'd have to do it once a month, and then later on, less often, yeah. So Shmuel b'yoma d'ovid milsa, a Shmuel on the day that he did the thing, meaning that he had blood left, Avdle Tavshila de Tachlin. They would prepare him in his house a dish of spleen. And for him to eat that after the bloodletting. The spleen is an organ in the body, and in particular, the job of it in the body is it breaks down and recycles red blood cells. So it's very rich in iron, and therefore, I guess Shmuel figured because of that, it's good to have after bloodletting because you need to replenish the iron that you lost. I don't think you can go into the average store and buy a spleen, but I suppose maybe in a specialty, I don't know. I mean, I suppose the kosher butcher shops or the kosher butchers, you know, agri-processors or whatever, I suppose they have to do something with that part. So I don't know, maybe you could buy it. I have no idea. Anyway, the fact is, by the way, it is actually one of the organs in the body where there's parts of it that have to be removed. They have to do nicker on it in order to be allowed to eat it. You have certain blood vessels and certain veins of fat that have to be pulled off of it. There's a whole layer of fat on one end of it. So that may be also a reason why they don't sell it much nowadays, because it'd be hard to repair. Yeah. Right. Anyway. Okay. Rabbi Yochanan Shossi ad nafik tihi mi'une. Rabbi Yochanan would drink so much wine, he held like Rab, that he held like Shmuel, rather, that he's supposed to drink wine. So he would drink so much that you could smell the smell of the wine from his ears. It might be a little bit of a guzma, but it might mean literally that, yeah. Anyway, Rab Nachman, so this is the simon that we have over here. We have the shin stands for Shmuel, the nun stands for the nun of Yochanan. The mem stands for the mem of Nachman, and so forth. A lot of times the Gemara will do that, by the way, and it's simonim. It doesn't always use the first letter. Sometimes it uses like the most noticeable letter in the name. What? Something unique or like the most noticeably pronounced letter in the name or whatever, yeah. Anyway, Rab Nachman Shossi ad de Kofi Tachle. Rab Nachman would also drink wine. He would drink so much that his own spleen would be floating in wine. Rabbi Yosef, after he had bloodletting done, would drink so much wine until it would be oozing out from the puncture that they made to do the bloodletting. By the way, the Gemara tells us, we learned at the end of Brachos, it's also at the end of Hodias, that Rabbi Yosef went through a period of 22 years where it says where bloodletting never came to his house. So it says at the end of Brachos and at the end of Hodias that they needed a new Rosh Yeshiva. The question that came down to between Rabbah and Rabbi Yosef. They offered the job to Rabbi Yosef, but he turned it down in favor of Rabbah. Then the Gemara says, for the next 22 years, he never had a bloodletter in his house. And there's a number of different explanations what that means. Some say he did need bloodletting done, but he would have it done in Rabbah's house because the whole time they were learning Torah. Another possibility is he didn't want to make the guy come to him because that would be showing like a little bit of mastery over him. Instead, he would go to the doctor. But then there was also an explanation that it means that in Schusa, that he gave up the job of Rosh Hashiva, then Hashem made it that for the next 22 years, he was so healthy, he didn't even need a bloodletter. So if so, then this would have been before or after that. Anyway, Rava Mahadar Achamra Bas Flosa Tarfi, Rava, when he had bloodletting done, he would make sure to get wine that was 3 leaves old, meaning Rashi explains that it came from a grapevine which has been growing for at least 3 years, because every year the grapevine sheds its leaves and then grows new ones. So when you have the vine as had 3 sets of leaves on it, then you know the wine from it is good quality. But Pashtos, I mean, you have the matter of Orla anyway. You can't drink wine from a grapevine that's less than 3 years old anyhow. So the Pashtos, we mean after the years of Orla, and then it additionally went through another 3 years. He was another one. Rab Nachman Yitzchok used to say to his Talmidim, the members of his yeshiva, "B'matusa minaychu, I beg of you, b'yoma dehakoza, on a day when you have bloodletting done, imru l'veisaychu Nachman ikol l'gabon. You should tell your wives that Nachman, meaning me, the Rosh Hashiva, is going to be visiting. Now, if your Rosh Hashiva is visiting your house, of course, you're going to make a huge suda in his honor. So therefore, in other words, that would be a way of like getting your wives to make a huge suda for you after you have bloodlet, because you need it for your health, even though, of course, I'm not going to actually be visiting, but this way that'll motivate them to make a nice big suda. And the Gemara continues, in fact, any other kind of tricking, of tricking merchants is also with the exception of the following one that the Gemara is going to describe, the shori, where that one is allowed. What it is, if a person has had bloodlet, and he can't afford the meat or the wine or whatever it is that he needs, particularly the wine that he needs for afterwards. So Lishko Zuza Mocha, what he should do is he should take a worn out Zuzga. So this is so worn out that nobody is going to want to accept it. It would be like the equivalent nowadays of like a really badly crumpled and ripped up dollar bill or something. The Lazel Lashev Hanusa. Then what he does is he goes one after another to 7 different stores where they sell wine. Now, when you go to this kind of place where you buy wine, they normally let you have a taste of it first so you can see if the wine is good quality and you want to buy it. So what happens? You come into the store, you say, I'd like to buy a zuz worth of your wine. Let me have a taste of it. So the guy gives you a taste. Then you say, okay, I'd like to buy it. Here's the zuz. And the storekeeper is going to say, I don't want that zuz. I would never be able to spend it. Nobody's going to accept it. But then at least you've drunk some wine. Then you repeat the thing in the next store and the next one after that until you've been in 7 different stores and you've drunk enough wine to be able to restore your health after bloodletting. So again, normally it would be also to do that. But in this kind of case, then the Gemara is saying it's allowed. Ad toim shir revisa until by the time he's gone between this and a whole bunch of different stores, he'll have ended up drinking a full revias, and that'll be enough to make him restore his strength.
He didn't pay a penny.
What? And he didn't pay a penny, man, right? The Eloi, now if not, what if he doesn't even have the worn out zuz? Leichel Shev Tamri Uchamta, then let him eat 7 black dates. Now, particularly, this is the Gemara as written in Bavel. The Gemara mentions in some other places, dates were very, very plentiful and cheap in Bavel. So even this person who barely has any money, Pashtus, he can still afford to be able to get some dates. The Lishuf Mishcha Betzidei, then he should rub oil on his temples, on the sides of his head. The Nigne Beshimsha, and he should sleep out in the sun. And between all those things, that'll help provide enough warmth in his body that he'll be able, that'll overcome the effects of the bloodletting. So in this connection, the Gemara mentions Avlet Ashkechev Shmuel Degoni Beshimsha. Avlet, who was a famous Goyish astrologer and scientist and whatever of those times, he was a friend of Shmuel. We'll have him again toward at the very end of the Masechta. We'll have him as well. Anyway, he one time saw Shmuel sleeping outside in the sun. Omele says, Hakima di Yehudoi, you wise man of the Jews, Bisha mi havatava, how can what's bad for you be what's good be good for you? Listen, too much sun is bad for you. How? What makes you think it's good for you that you're sleeping out in it? Omele, yoimedah kozahu, so Shmuel tells him, because I just had bloodlet today and therefore I need the extra warmth. But Velohi, the Gemara says, actually that wasn't so. Shmuel had not in fact had bloodletting done that day. There is a particular day of the year when the sun is really good for you, and that is Yoma de Noflabet Tkufas Tammuz, the day on which Tkufas Tammuz comes out. On the bottom over here, it says a different gear says Tkufas Tavis, the day of the winter solstice. Anyway, Vesava, but Shmuel decided, Loi Igli Lei, I don't want to inform Avlet of that, because in general, you don't want to give advice to people, to Umasa Olam, especially Ovd Avod Azara, as this Avlet was, that will help them out. We find in a different Gemara, for example, that Daniel gave advice to Nebuchadnezzar how to evade a punishment in Hashemayim, and later on Daniel suffered consequences for it. So by the same token, Shmuel didn't want to tell Avlet the secret.
The time was to book makes much more sense because you need the heat of the sun to get the vitamin D and everything else.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. So yeah, and well, I mean, a cold sun will still give you vitamin D as well. Yeah, okay. So the Gemara continues, Rav Shmuel de Amitavayu. Now in this connection, Rav and Shmuel both say, Kol ha-meiko besudas ha-kozas dam, if a person is careless with the meal after bloodletting, mekilim is a noise of min ha-shamayim. And then Hashem makes it that Hashem says that we'll be careless, so to speak, with his mizonis, that he doesn't necessarily need to have such parnosa. But Oimim, because the Beis Din Shamayla says, He didn't even care about his own life. Should I, Hashem, be concerned for him? No. So therefore, if he loses his parnasa, it's his own fault. Hashem protects the fools, but that's the Gemara is going to mention that point later. But still, he still has to make the effort. So the Gemara continues. Rav Shmuel da'ami tarvayu. Rav and Shmuel also say another point. A person has bloodlet. He shouldn't sit in a place where it's windy. Rashi explains, particularly, you mean, for example, that he stays, let's say, for example, in a hallway where there are lots of windows. So therefore, like you have it's like a wind tunnel effect, like the wind blows around inside there. Dilma Shofi Le Umna, because what might have happened when the doctor had let the blood, he might have taken out so much of his blood, Umukim Le out of the Easter, where he had left him with only a revius of blood. Throughout Shas, there's a concept that a revius of blood is the minimum needed to sustain life. It's a little hard to understand in modern terms. I mean, if a person has lost that much blood, they'd go into shock. But the Gemara takes it as a given throughout Shas that a revius is the minimum amount of blood that can be in a person, and that will be enough to sustain him. Maybe it means only a revius of red blood cells, who knows? Anyway, whatever the case. So it might be that the doctor has removed everything but that last revius. But Osi Zika, so now the wind is going to come, the Shoif Mine, and it's going to blow out a little bit of the blood that's left in his body. But Osi Lide Sakona, and then the guy's going to be in danger because he doesn't have enough blood. So therefore, you shouldn't sit in a windy place. The Gemara continues in this connection. Shmuel have a rog of Ovid Milsa, the base of the Shev Levena V'Archa. Shmuel used to regularly have his bloodletting done in a building where the walls were made out of 7 bricks and a half brick. The Gemara explains, Rashi brings over here, based on other Gemaras, that a brick in those times was 3 tefachim. So therefore, 7 bricks equals 21 tefachim, and another half brick is a tefach and a half. So the walls were 22 and a half tefachim thick, which is close to 4 amos. So you're talking about six or seven feet thick to prevent any wind from coming in. At one time he had the bloodletting done, and he felt weaker than normal. Bodak, so he checked into it, and he found in one place in the wall, 1 half brick was missing. So that made all the difference. That made that now enough outside air was able to get in. That caused him to be weaker than normal. The Gemara continues another thing. Rabu Shmuel Damu Tavayu, Chai Manda Ovid Milsa, when a person has had blood let, Lita Midi, first he should taste something, but Hodo Lepok, only then he should go outdoors. De Eloi Toy Midi, if he doesn't eat something before going outdoors after bloodletting, then what happens? It depends what he first meets. E Poga B'Shochva, if the first thing he sees is a dead person, Yarka Apoi, the result is his face is going to become green or yellow. If he meets up first with somebody who killed somebody, miss, then he himself is going to die. E pogab a dover acher, and if the first thing he meets up with is a dover acher, a pig, koshel a dover acher, then it's bad for him. It makes him that he's more susceptible to the other kind of dover acher, namely tsaras. Rashi refers to a Gemara in Kiddushin that says that out of the 10 measures of tsaras that Hashem put in the world, pigs have 9 of them. So therefore, now when he meets up with that, then he's susceptible to that. Rabu Shmuel Dami Tavayu and Rab and Shmuel say another thing in this connection. Haiman de Ovid Milson, when a person has had blood let, Lishi Puta Vahadu Lokum, he should wait a little bit and only then get up, not get up the moment he's finished with it. De Omamar, as in fact we learn in a Braisa, Hei Dvorim, Kravim Lamisa, Yosem and Achaim. There are 5 things that if a person does them, he's closer to death than to life. In other words, these are things that can easily kill a person from the shock. The Elohim, Ochav Omar, a person eats and right away stands up. Shosav Omar, or if he drinks and right away stands up. Yoshin Omar, if he sleeps and then right away gets up without taking the time to wake up properly first, that is. Now, in Shulchan Aruch, it says that as soon as you wake up, you should realize the Eibishter is standing over you and get up quickly. But still, we see from this that there should still be a little break in between. The Pashtus, you sit on the bed first and you say Modani, and then you get up. Anyway, the hik is dam ba'omad. The 4th one is bloodletting and then standing up right away. And the 5th one is shimish mitaseh ba'omad, is having relations and standing up right away. So all of those are bad for a person's health, and therefore we're saying that a person shouldn't do them. Yom Yom Mashiach Ge'ula. Yud, what is today? Yud Aleph 7. The Rebbe talked about that the avoda to bring Mashiach Tzidkenu v'poyel mamash. So you have the pashtus, that means by adding in Torah and mitzvahs. In limud haTorah, that means both in nigla and in pimiyas haTorah, and doing mitzvahs behidur. And that means especially the sicha was on Parshas Shemini shortly after Pesach. So keeping the minna, because the Alter Rebbe writes in the siddur to learn Perkei Avos after Mincha and Shabbos first between Pesach and Shavuos, and then continuing throughout the rest of the summer. So that helps bring Mashiach. Continuing on Hilchos Maso Matan, we talked about yesterday that you have to make sure to weigh and measure honestly. So you also have a din in that connection that you also have to have. Now the pasuk says you shouldn't have in your pocket different size weights, or you shouldn't have in your house different kinds of different size weights. So and Chazal explained that it means lo yulach habakischa, a person won't have in his pocket money if he has evan v'evan. He won't have bebeischa, he won't have his needs because efer v'efer. Instead, if a person has honest weights and measures, then yulachah, then I'll have a lot. Rashi brings it on the pasuk. Also, Chazal say that what should a person do in the Gemara in Nida, where the Anshe Alexandria asked Rabbi Yeshua a bunch of questions. One of them was, what should a person do to become rich? And the answer was, Yisav Yitid Ben Munah, he should do business honestly, and daven for Rachmim, from Hashem, to whom all wealth belongs, Liyah Kesef, Liyah Zahav. The Gemara explains that they actually need both. You can't have one without the other. You can't say, I'll do business honestly, but not daven to Hashem, and you can't do the other way around either. I'll daven, I'll be a frum guy and daven, but not, yeah.
A crooked business.
Yes.